Hi, I'm Adele Jones, author of the Blaine Compton Trilogy. In this series, there are two characters who are super health conscious. One is Dr. Eddie Jonick, a scientist with an outdoorsy surfer come general fitness focus, and the other is Blaine's BFF, Jet Faraday. Now, Jet's more of a bodybuilding-focused gym junkie, but he's also totally addicted to ice cream. So, in keeping with this theme, the fitness, not the ice cream, today I'm chatting with the super fit Matt Betts. Welcome, Matt.
Thank you.
Now, Matt, you actually make a living from helping others achieve their fitness goals, right?
Yeah, that's what I've been doing for the last probably 5 or 6 years in the health and fitness industry, definitely.
Cool. And now you're also a bodybuilder.
Yeah, that's a little hobby I have on the side. Keeps me accountable to my goals and gives me something to strive towards, definitely. Yeah, I enjoy it.
Great. Okay, so can you start by telling us a little bit about your role as a fitness coach?
Yes, my role as a fitness coach is to be the person who, well, knows where people need to go. Like, everyone has a goal and that's where they want to be. But in the grand scheme of things, I'm the person who will direct them how they're going to get to their goal, what they need to do first, where they can sort of improve their lifestyle to make their goals a little easier.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all deal.
Definitely not. Everyone's got their own body, obviously, and everyone's body is a little bit different. Yeah. different bodies respond differently to different things. So it's always, I guess, for me, interesting, going to work best for an individual and making sure that their plan works the best for them.
Sure. And I guess people are always, you know, busy, or they've got different kind of responsibilities and would have to fit that into their lifestyle as well.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I can't just be like, oh, you need to eat 6 meals a day, but their lifestyle only allows them to eat 3 meals. So we've just got to work around it and find out the best way for them.
Yeah, right. Great. Okay, yeah. So what range of clients do you train? Are they all super serious athletes, or do you have clients who just want to improve their general health and fitness?
No, I pretty much look at training anyone who's willing to learn. Like, some of my clients are very fit, but then I've got clients that are just getting on board with changing their lives and getting a little healthier.
Right.
So it's okay. A big range of people.
Okay. Okay, so that sounds good.
Yeah, okay. As long as they're willing, I'm happy to help.
Okay, so there's got to be a bit of give and take there.
Yeah, definitely. They've got to be keen and they've got to want to change. Like, an open mind is the best way to approach it. But if they're, like, begrudging on how they want to do things, I'm a little bit more hesitant to help them.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Ooh. Now, do you have a specific approach in determining what sort of training routine is suitable for a client?
If I'm going to approach a client, or if a client approaches me on how, like, with their training, it really depends on them. I've always got a questionnaire that I'll give to them, or at least like a mini interview at the very least that I ask that we do before we start writing anything on paper or putting anything in place, because I want to know what a person's abilities are like, what their experience is in their health and fitness, what they enjoy, so I can ensure that what I do is going to suit them 100%. So from there, generally, I'll work out a training calendar, which will let them know when they're training, what they're going to be doing for that training session, and then we'll knuckle down into the individual routines. And then, I guess, what exercises and what training they do will depend on their goal, but I'm a big believer in a base of resistance training for everyone. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of carryover to every other area of fitness and every other area in life as well.
Yeah, I've actually heard that. Yeah, it's really important.
Yeah, it's great. Especially as you get older, it's really, really important.
Yes. Okay, so you're also a bodybuilder.
Yes.
How on earth did you get into bodybuilding? Like, you know, how old were you when you started out? What sort of got you there?
I was about 17 or 18 when I started actually training regularly. Like, I've been in the gym since I was probably 16.
Okay.
About 17 or 18, I was actually training regularly and I had some fitness-related goals. And as I guess achieved some of those goals, I became more and more interested in what bodybuilding is. I had some friends that were into it and I sort of did a bit of delving into it.
Okay, so it wasn't the orange haze or bronzer or anything like that. It was more the challenge.
Yeah, definitely more the challenge. Like, the tanning's one part of it.
Yeah.
But it's not something I really knew about to begin with.
Oh, really? So what did you do when you heard about that?
Pardon?
Did you think that was a bit odd when you heard about it, or you're just cool with it?
When you understand the why behind, like, the whole tan thing is not an everyday thing. It's like you've dieted down for a specific show and day before you need to get some tan on because they have that many lights up on a stage that if you just, well, if you're like me and you're pasty white, you're not going to show off any definition on stage. That's like not kind of not the point of bodybuilding. The tan really brings it all out. So that's the why. So you can live with that.
Instead of being a glare, you're actually a person up there.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool. Okay, so what did that teach you about training when you're actually learning about bodybuilding?
A lot of things. Mainly, like, consistency is the thing with bodybuilding is you can't just have, like, one great session.
Yeah.
But you've got to build up. Like each session counts and builds up towards your goal. If you're not consistent with it, and it's like anything in life, if you're not consistent with it, you're not going to see the best results. That was where the biggest thing it taught me. And it taught me to always have a goal.
That's important, isn't it?
If I don't have a goal, I really struggle to be. Like I can always eat well, but whether I can train hard, I don't really feel I train as hard when I don't have a goal.
Okay, and look, I understand there's a huge lead time involved in prepping for a bodybuilding comp.
Like 20 weeks we're talking just for dieting sort of things.
So overall dieting and training, would it be, 6 months or what kind of time frame are you looking
at? Depends on where you're at, really.
Okay, so you're not starting from base, you've kind of got a bit of an advantage there.
All of us, most people that are getting into bodybuilding are already doing some form of training.
Right.
So where it would really depend on, like for bodybuilding in particular, it's like it's a physique-based sport. So they might have some weaknesses in their physique they need to fix before they think about competing, which might take 6 months, and then they do a dieting down. So it can really take a lot of time.
And is there an age limit on bodybuilding just from a physical development perspective?
I definitely think there can be, just because of the from a physical development standpoint. Like, there's nothing wrong with quality resistance training if you have good form and it's well programmed, it's structured. But it's the dieting side of things that I think if you're too young can really have negative effects on not just like physical health, but also emotional and mental health as well. And especially if you're a young adolescent, like you're still 15 or 16. Yeah. I would definitely not be looking at competing until you're at least 18 or 19.
Right.
It's hard to put an exact age because everyone develops differently, but it's better to give your body the nutrients it actually needs to grow in every way, not just muscle, but also like hormone health and bone, like mental health and everything. So I always wouldn't start thinking about competing until like 18 or 19.
Okay, right. So how did you feel on your very first bodybuilding comp? How did you feel when you stepped onto that stage?
Outclassed is probably the word I'd used.
Oh, wow.
Even my first competition, I'd spent months preparing on my own. I had no idea what I was up against or what I really needed to do. So I winged it. But after a minute or two, dealing with that, I just stopped being nervous and started enjoying myself because it didn't really matter.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, because it's my first show and we're all there to showcase what we've worked on, and that's what. But really, I reminded myself that was what my main goal was.
Yes.
It also helps there's heaps of bright lights that you can't really see past the front of the stage or the judging table.
So you're basically blinded.
Oh, yeah. You really get a sore head afterwards.
Oh, no way. Really?
Yeah, just so many bright lights in your eyes and you're trying to smile and,
and staring at these lights. And you can't see, but it's great.
Pretty much.
You mentioned trying to actually train on your own at first. So are you part of a greater network now?
In a sense, I've got a few like mentors, but I still cover a lot of my own training. I pretty much do all my own training, my own diet myself. I guess I'm 5-6 years on and a lot more experienced. So definitely a lot more effective than back then.
Okay, are there any funny stories from your time in the bodybuilding scene? Like, you hear those people who get stuck under an overloaded bar. I might actually be related to someone who got stuck under an overloaded bar, but I did rescue. But have you
seen that a few times.
Yeah, I know. Oh, it could happen so easy.
Yeah.
But have you seen anything just, like, really ridiculous or hilarious?
I see some weird stuff in the gyms pretty regularly.
Okay.
I train a few different gyms just for variety and just people overloading machines. There's so much weight.
Yeah.
Doing everything but the movement they're meant to be doing to move the weight always, I don't know, it makes me laugh. But at the same time, I just feel bad because you want to go and help them, but you know that the people that don't want help.
You know, that's probably, that'd be me training probably. Yeah. Oh, hang on.
Oh, they like flop about like a fish. It's very amusing. Probably some of the weirdest things I've seen is like the weird secrets people try at the last minute to get like with a 0.5 or 1% better. My first show, I didn't really know about this sort of secrets or whatever people do. And I watched someone guzzle honey out of a squeeze bottle, and he probably drank about half a liter of honey in the guzzle.
Is that not going to make you throw up?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I've learned about the why people do that since then.
Sure.
It still really confuses me, but it was the funniest thing I'd ever seen the first time I saw it.
That's pretty brave to drink that much honey at once, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so in my trilogy, their character Jet works super hard in the gym, and he's kind of aiming to look really cut, you know, and so I understand that to get that look, you have that process of building up and then shredding. And now that's pretty well my entire repertoire of bodybuilding terminology. But can someone actually overtrain? Like, and this can be general fitness, not just bodybuilding.
Yeah.
And if so, what advice could you give to maintaining a training balance?
Well, everyone can overtrain. Like your progress is only as good as your recovery. So we've all got a different threshold, but there's going to be a point where you'll hit the threshold and your body won't actually be able to recover effectively from what it's doing. Like, and over time you can increase your threshold, but going 0 to 100 is only going to lead to overdoing it. So my biggest tip is like listen to your body and track what you're doing as well. And like, don't just like think, oh, just soreness, but like, are you tired? Are you more alert? Are you getting hungrier? Do you still have energy in the day? Your vitality, all of these things are signs of how well you're recovering.
Okay.
Like even if you aren't getting sore, but you are really, really tired all the time, odds are your body's missing something and it's not recovering well.
Okay. So that's where the nutrition comes into it too.
That's where nutrition's so important. Right. Definitely. Yeah. Like your nutrition is what will allow you to recover. Okay. Essentially. Right. Yeah.
Well, I've got a bunch of friends who are fitness fanatics, and I see heaps of them consuming supplement drinks, yet not once in my novels have I written a scene with Jet drinking a protein shake. Well, not yet, but actually he's partly because he's a secondary character. So we don't get to see his whole world, but it does seem that his major dietary supplement is ice cream. So if you've had a massive workout and all you've got available is junk food, is ice cream a bad choice or a good choice?
If it's all you've got available, I guess it's better than McDonald's. So the dairy in it will provide some protein and the sugar will provide carbs. But if you compare it to a quality, specially designed sports supplement, the difference is pretty clear.
Right.
Issue with, well, most junk foods is the combination of sugar and fat, which essentially, after a few hormonal processes, will just store it all as fat. So therefore, like, your specially designed product's going to make sure it has barely any sugar and fat and requires everything that your body needs.
Okay.
Generally, this is the way to go, as most people don't need a sugar hit after they train to adequately recover.
Okay.
But it is better than McDonald's.
Okay, yes, but I think there's a lot of things that are better than McDonald's.
quite a few.
Shh, don't tell McDonald's that. Oops, I shouldn't say that. Oh, dear. Okay, so at what stage of training are supplement drinks valuable then?
If you're just going for a walk or a 30-minute jog a few times a week, I'd just encourage you to eat food rather than use a supplement.
Okay.
Because if you're eating the right food, like supplements are that. They're there to supplement the holes in your diet. So if you can get adequate recovery from whole food and everything you need from your food, they're not valuable at all. But if you're doing higher intensity, more resistance training, so I'm talking more boot camps, interval training, CrossFit, lift weightlifting, right down to your general gym weight sessions, I would be recommending a quality recovery product and then using that in combination with your balanced whole food diet.
Right.
It's just because it digests just that little bit faster than food and gets the nutrients in there straight away, and then your food, and you do need more protein when you're doing that sort of training just for the muscles. But food really needs to form the foundation. It's got to divide deliver like all the little multi-nutrients and cofactors, but it just can't provide the speed that a good quality recovery product can.
Right, okay. Okay. Yeah. Now, do you mind if we get a little bit controversial now?
Sure.
Okay. Look, I've actually, before we did this interview, I had a little bit of a look online, and I saw that a couple of ex-bodybuilders mentioned performance-enhancing drugs on their blogs, and it wasn't actually in a negative way, it was just like talking about it. And I sort of then noticed there were other groups that put an emphasis on what they called natural bodybuilding. So in your experience, are drugs an issue in the bodybuilding scene?
Bodybuilding's pretty split on the issue of drugs, and I think both sides of this argument have pretty valid points.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first thing to remember is in Australia, in general, performance-enhancing drugs are pretty illegal, like they're Class C banned substances.
Yeah.
So that really leaves up to the individual if they want to accept that sort of responsibility. In terms of bodybuilding as a whole sport, it's made up of a few different federations, and each have their own rules on this issue. So there's some that will accept that if you want to use performance-enhancing drugs, that's perfectly fine. You can go and compete in that federation. Odds are 95% of people in it use them. That's sort of it. So they do accommodate for that. And that's like your mainstream bodybuilding, in a sense, the ones that everyone knows and sees around the place.
Yes,
okay. Personally, I choose to compete in World Anti-Doping Authority tested competitions, and I can really attest to them testing.
Oh, really?
It's an awkward experience.
Okay,
yeah.
Yes. I've heard some experience from other athletes.
Yeah, well, it's, they make you go the whole way for that.
Wow, okay. And he's like, and I'm not saying anything more about that.
It's just a really awkward experience.
Yeah, I could imagine.
Stepping off stage in your less than underwear and say, hey, can you just go in this cup?
Oh, nice.
It's like, okay, great.
Look, wait a minute.
But anyway,
wow.
I like to stay in that side of bodybuilding.
Sure. Because
at least I know I'm tested. Everyone I compete against is tested.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to really worry about the performance-enhancing side of things. And that would be what you call the natural bodybuilding, quote-unquote. But you can't deny that they're is and always will be drugs in certain areas of bodybuilding.
Sure. Okay. Right. Well, cholesterol is a molecular precursor of testosterone, right?
Yeah.
So do bodybuilders consume high cholesterol diets?
Cholesterol in its lipid form is definitely a precursor to testosterone.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of it, whether it's specifically looked for in a diet, a little bit. A lot of people just look for getting healthy saturated fats, which contains the cholesterol.
Sure.
So they mainly get it from free-range eggs, grass-fed meats, and that's generally recommended as part of a diet designed for building muscle. Whether you're bodybuilding or not, because the benefits of testosterone for a healthier body are well known in terms of recovery, energy, everything really. Yeah.
So can you give us your four top tips for a healthier life?
Sure. Top four for me, one is eat whole foods. As I said earlier, food's your foundation. Just get rid of your processed foods.
Yeah.
And stick to mainly whole foods. Not only is your body going to thank you for the extra nutrients, but you'll feel better and you'll have more energy and you'll get sick less.
Right.
Your body's not under stress.
So how much energy do you invest in your own diet?
In my which diet, sorry?
In your own diet. You're talking about getting whole foods and unprocessed. Do you have a delivered, some people get the diet plans and things like that, or do you actually just go out to your local produce markets? How do you actually do that?
I write myself a plan. I stick it on the fridge and I'll just, if it's not on the plan, I don't buy it, pretty much.
Right.
My lifestyle is pretty busy, and if I was able to go to, had the time, I would probably go down to the markets and get the majority of my shopping from, a farmer's markets or whatnot, but at the moment, I just go to Coles, and you can still grab, whole foods from Coles or Woolies, they've got the veggies there, and while they're not organic, they're a lot better than going to the biscuit aisle.
Ah.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, yes.
Yeah. So, like, I guess, like, eating whole foods and just talking, like, meats, unprocessed grains and veggies, that sort of a thing.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Right. And so, tip number two.
Oh, yes, tip number two. Get 6 to 8 hours of sleep. That's really a lot. Like, that's pretty important. Like, a lot of people recommend 8 to 10, but lifestyle sometimes doesn't allow that. So I say 6 to 8, as long as you're pretty consistent with it. If you're not sleeping, your body's going to be continually under stress and eventually wear out. And sleeping is your body's way of recovering and repairing from day-to-day life and stress and exercise, really everything.
Mm-hmm.
And some processes our body needs to survive only happen while we sleep. So without sleep, we can really suffer.
Right. So that kind of just nails a whole heap of new parents on the head. Wow.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's tough.
Yeah. No.
Sometimes it's tough.
It is actually, that's a really hard stage. But, you know, as you say, in life, our lifestyle is not conducive to really regular solid sleep at times, particularly with devices. Like, do you have, you know, they talk about sleep hygiene and particularly with devices and things like that. Do you actually incorporate that in your recommendations to your clients?
Yeah, I do recommend not looking at a screen for about half an hour before you go to bed,
mm-hmm.
or if you have to, using a blue light filter.
Right.
Just because blue lights and screens excite parts of your brain that really should be shutting down and take a long time to shut down.
Yeah.
Like, they do take a while. If you're trying to sleep with them, you'll actually affect your REM sleep,
yeah,
which is your main recovery.
Okay, so editing until 2 in the morning isn't really recommended, okay.
It's not recommended, right. No, but if you have, on just for computers, you can get, like, a basic blue light app called Flux.
Huh.
I use it, and it, like, just automatically turns on at about 7 at night.
Right.
On my computer, and it sort of, like, dims the screen. It goes a bit yellowy, but it gets rid of that blue light filter, and you can sleep a lot better.
Okay, cool. I'll have to invest in that, I think.
It's free, so it's good.
Yeah, cool. So, tip number three
would be to move. So it doesn't matter what, but just doing basic exercise every day will help release endorphins. You'll be happier. You'll be more energetic, which is funny, even though you're moving. And it'll lead to a more productive day. Like, I really like to start my day off with some form of exercise or something.
Sure.
So whether that's, like, I do park. I have options to park really close to work, but I tend to park, like, a good 10-minute walk away just to walk.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to get a little bit more movement in.
Yeah, no, that's good. I actually have a little bit of a personal philosophy on that, that something is better than nothing, like, in not just...
Definitely.
Yeah, just exercise, even if you don't get a great big activity in, if you do something. And
yeah.
I sort of flow that onto other areas of my life, like even with, you know, writing and things like that. But it just something kind of gets you moving. It's good.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm.
That's it. Something's better than nothing, and it's the best place to start.
Yeah, yeah. So, tip number four.
Tip number four would be to be consistent, and that goes to, like, life in general. Whatever you want change in, whether it's your habits, health, or a goal you've set, somewhere with, like, work or career or maybe health and fitness, like, consistency is the key to achieving it. Because if you're not consistently working towards it, you'll, like, lose track, you'll forget about it. And the more consistent you are, the more natural and automatic it becomes to do what you've put your mind to do.
Right. So you're basically creating that habit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. Now, if anyone wants to contact you or find out more about you, your work as a trainer and nutrition coach, or even just general fitness, how do they find Matt Betts?
Easiest way would be via my email, which is allbettsofftraining@gmail.com, and Betts has 2 T's in that. I'm sure they'll all link that.
Yep.
Or they can find me at ASN Toowoomba, or Australian Sports Nutrition in Toowoomba. I manage that currently. Or via my business mobile, which is 0423 010300.
Fantastic. I love that. Gmail, all bets off training. That should be easy to remember too. No, that's great. No, so thank you so much for taking time to chat today, Matt. It's been fun talking fitness.
No worries, I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me be interviewed.
An absolute pleasure having you.
No problem.